Hello.
And
welcome
to
Map
to
the
to
Star.
The podcast that looks to the stars abroad in Hollywood and above in the night sky. Hello. Welcome to Map to the Stars, the podcast. My name is Jeremy.
I'm Michelle.
We are your filmy chartographers. Mm-hmm. And we take a deep dive into the astrological charts and mm-hmm. filmic works of many diverse talents. Mm-hmm. And we see if they co-align, if those themes that are in their charts show up as motifs in the movies that they make. Because this is a film analysis and astrology podcast.
That's beautifully
said. If you didn't know. And today, of all days, and episodes of all episodes, they do co-align a little bit. And
a little
we can't
bit.
Wait to talk about
bit.
It. This is our second take of this podcast. We already recorded 30 minutes. Okay, we're actually going to stop right there. Generally, we don't take this unorthodox approach where we actually interrupt ourselves in the middle of an episode. But that episode that you're hearing right now is the second take that we had to do of this Lulu Wang episode. That is the topic of interest, the talent at hand for this episode of Map to the Stars. We found some of the intro just unusable, so we're kind of cutting around that right now, and we're doing, well, I'm doing, Jeremy, your filmic chartographer, I'm doing a little bit of an intro here, and then Michelle's going to take it away during the actual episode itself and talk about Lulu's birth chart, talk about that watery Pisces energy that we find in her movies. So apologies for the sort of unorthodox approach to this episode. Hopefully we don't have to do this again in future episodes, but for now, this is what we get. And, you know, we could just hear more lovely music from Jacob Anstey as his transitions will guide us through this episode. Don't worry, for the most part, the large chunk of this episode is the classic astro, filmy, goody nugs that you come here for as we discuss Lulu Wang's films Posthumous from 2014 and The Farewell from 2019, respectively. So here we will go back to the actual episode and intro this birth chart for you. Thanks.
Self-to-do, is that what you're saying?
Last episode, we took a look at Barry Jenkins, his very deep, emotional Scorpio energy, a dark and romantic and
wet and wild.
Lots of water. Lots of water imagery in this, in that episode. And in this episode, a lot of death motifs and lying motifs, mm-hmm. deception.
Lots.
But mixed in with identity and family and career. And we'll dive into it and hopefully be a little bit more succinct than last episode, though we had a bunch to tackle in that one. But many similarities, you know, we bring up Barry because they are partners, just like Michelle and I are partners.
So we get
it. So we get it. Well, hopefully the cat's not on the table. And, that was the intro for this one. And we're just going to go friggin' wet and wild into this one.
Yeah. Let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And there are some similarities with the first movies that they make in terms of how they relate to the rest of their career, both Lulu and Barry. Do you want to start off with Lulu's chart?
Sure.
And we can kind of go from there and just, yeah, yeah.
Sure thing. Lulu was born on February 25th. 1983, just 4 years after Barry. So they're definitely in the same generation, which is why they share a lot of things in their chart, a lot of generational trends or aspects between planets. So February 25th, 1983 in Beijing, just like Barry's chart from last episode, we don't have a birth time. So we're a little unsure about moon, ascendant, houses, very important things in the astrological makeup of a person. However, we'll do what we can. It's very interpretive. It's very abstract. It's very artistic. So we're working with what we can.
And two movies that a person writes and directs says a lot about who they are.
Exactly. Right? So we're going to run with it. Compared to Barry's chart from last week, which was very Scorpio focused, we noticed it's kind of undeniable, the Scorpio energy in his chart.
Yeah.
Lulu's is a little bit more all over the map. So there aren't key themes between like signs, for example, like we saw with Barry, where a bunch of things exist in the same sign. But she has a lot of masculine energy, a lot of fire energy. Her moon could either be in Cancer or Leo. It changed on the day she was born, but I think I have like a good argument for either.
Interesting. Okay.
It could be either. This episode, I think we'll talk a lot about her Pisces nature. Her sun is in Pisces. It is the core of, you know, who she is, how she expresses herself. So even though that's like a very shallow interpretation of someone just looking at their sun sign, I think the Pisces themes do come up in both films in very different ways. So that'll be the focus of like what I pulled from the movie specifically. Yeah. I think we'll just leave the rest for our discussion, but just know Pisces gal.
Pisces, yeah. Key term.
Mm-hmm.
And either moon. All right.
Either Cancer or Leo.
We were looking at moonlight. Last episode, we're looking at either moon in this one.
It could be either.
Are you an either or an either person?
Either.
I say either.
Interesting.
Oh, boy. I give us two more months.
Don't say that.
I'm kidding.
So today we're going to be talking about two of Lulu's movies. She is
the only two so far.
Only two movies deep in her directorial career, two feature lengths, mm-hmm. both posthumous from 2014 and The Farewell 2019.
Posthumous and The Farewell. Yes.
I think similar to Barry, which I'll just note on briefly. And I think this comes up with honestly like a lot of the directors we talk about. Both of their first movies, they made during their Saturn return.
Yeah.
So that's a very important transformational, like reflective period in someone's mm-hmm. life where you're just like figuring your stuff out. So
PTA was such a wonderkin though that he's making his third movie.
Yeah,
his third movie, Magnolia.
Imagine
Imagine making that movie during your Saturn return.
At your age, dude.
Obviously.
Yeah.
I know. It's crazy. Like, what the hell am I doing here? We need two takes to talk about a director. No, that's good.
Yeah.
Second is the best because first is the worst.
First is the worst, but like both of them exploded during their second movie, both A24.
Yeah, their career, breakthroughs.
Like, career defining movies.
Yeah.
Both of their second movies, The Farewell, Moonlight. So I think that's interesting.
Unfortunately, in maybe such a way that they'll constantly be compared to that movie. Luckily, you know, Beale Street is such a phenomenal, almost a masterpiece mm-hmm. in itself.
And I'm sure Lulu's third movie will be as well.
Yeah. We talked about, again, in that ghost episode you will never hear, hidden in our deep files on our hard drive. But, you know, currently quarantining at the recording of this, at the time of this recording. It looks like she's about to film something else in China.
Somewhere. Yeah, she's self-quarantining. Mm-hmm. For I think 3 weeks, and I'm sure she's working on something. She's been posting really cute pictures of Barry and their dog just on FaceTime together.
Speaking of which, Lulu, follow us back if you can.
Oh my gosh, she looked at our story. I know, it was crazy.
No pressure. No. So why don't we discuss
posthumous
broadly the films? And I'll actually do a little bit of a plot story and a summary. That's where we derailed on our first take.
It went
first
so
is the worst,
far off.
Second is the best.
And
so
if this hasn't been said in episodes past, like spoilers ahead.
Spoilers ahead.
We're gonna
summarize
the movies.
Yeah,
analyze the endings.
Yeah.
But
we are all over the place because we're not necessarily doing a breakdown of every single aspect of the movie. We're just
general
picking pieces
themes
apart, which I feel is like a little bit alienating for the audience, for anyone listening. So we apologize. So we're going to try to lay some foundation for once.
But it's also
really briefly.
It's also why we suggest that if you have not watched either of the movies that
we post
you do watch
yeah.
Before the episode, because I think it really helps. I mean, the reason we get so rambly is because we've just watched them. So I feel like we assume everyone else has.
But. Yeah, these are cold. These are in the fridge a little bit. You know, it's been a week since we've watched them, honestly.
But
So I know. Yeah. Let's kick things off. I'll try to do, I have a couple key things to say about
posthumous
from 2014. Three main players in this: Britt Marling, Jack Huston, Eric Alder. Alder.
Those are the names of the actors, not the characters.
No, I know. Yeah, I know. Thank you very much.
Oh. I was like, wait.
Britt, respectively. All of them respectively. Mackenzie Grain is Britt. Britt is Mackenzie Grain. Jack is Liam Price. Movie takes place in Berlin. It's about the upper crust high art society. It's a bit of a satire of that, a romantic dramedy, if you will. It's got like some slapstick tendencies with, like, you know, Britt doing her best Charlie Chaplin up on the bench, trying to get up on the big bench. I was like, oh, she's doing a Chaplin over here. So it's romance, funny. Romance and antics ensue as they start to fall for each other. And he kind of picks apart a bunch of things about her and, like, just like looks straight through her because her writing career is a bit of like in limbo right now the movie.
Sorry if I missed it. Did you preface that Liam like basically faked his own death and is pretending to be his brother, but is going along with the suicide charade because it like makes him a more famous artist?
So I know. No, I didn't.
Okay.
Which
I
is
just
like
did
the key
it.
To the movie. Again,
yeah.
We like to.
That's why it's called posthumous because.
Posthumous. Posthumous. We've been saying it every single wrong way that you can possibly say it.
So we keep saying it wrong. So I'm like, that's how you say it.
Posthumous. It's called posthumous because he's posthumously existing after his faked suicide. A homeless man steals his tote after he falls asleep in a tunnel.
And everyone thinks he died.
And everyone thinks he died because they identify the homeless man as the guy who died. The homeless man looked healthy enough. When he was going away with a shopping cart. I don't know what. Anyway. And then the art dealer and him have basically a falling out at the very beginning. He's destroying all his art. He doesn't like this digital art installation that's currently taking place. Britt's boyfriend is also an art dealer or in the art world. So it's all about that. And it's the old adage and idiom and whatever that you're worth more dead than alive in your career and everything goes up in price. So. They're all hypocrites, all the art stuff. But I don't know, like, there's not that much here in the movie in terms of, like, how it relates to Barry, I guess, if we do want to bridge those. You know, as we talked about in the never-to-be-released episode, it creates a nice blueprint and draft for what they're going to hone in on much more explicitly with medicine for Moonlight's melancholy. And less so with this one, but they both deal with death and lies because both, you know, main characters are like lying about a death in this and The Farewell. It is interesting in that respect. But what did you have for this movie astrologically?
Sure.
And, you know, how can I, you know, bridge it necessarily? So again, it's he's faking his own suicide so that his career can have a boost and the art dealer can make some money off that.
Sure.
And Britt is a writer, investigative journalist. She kind of becomes a detective on it and, you know, has a hunch, pretty much knows the audience, you know, figures that she knows as well throughout this. So, and that's like interesting enough, you know, but what did you have in there?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, you know, you did connect it to Barry. And I thought the same where, like, her first movie, Lulu's, seems so much more disconnected from
The
her.
Farewell.
Yeah.
And from her. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just like a lot.
After seeing in retrospect, though.
Sure. Yeah. Exactly. Once watching
The Farewell
them back to
is back. Autobiographical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So during the time of the both making and release of this movie, Transiting Neptune was making a trine with Lulu's natal Saturn. All these goobly goobly words. But yeah. Basically,
beep, beep, boo, boo.
It's like, I don't know, maybe at that time in her life during her Saturn return, she's like seeing this responsibility to make like very grand, like all-encompassing statements about, you know, art and identity and success. And it's not as personal to her. Right. It's like, it's not about her family. It's not about her cultural background. It's not about any of that. It's just about like art and,
I know,
you know, how society like treats the artist or whatever that might be. So it's like, I don't know. That's where I see this movie as like a lot. I don't mean like higher concept, but it's just like,
it's a high
concept,
I mean? Because it's just such a lofty idea.
It's a lot less grounded. It's just like,
yeah, I know. I know.
Just like Barry, like I mentioned, they're born within the same couple of years. So they share a lot of like generational transits, generational aspects. With that, transiting Saturn in Scorpio at the time of this movie was opposite Lulu's Chiron in Taurus. We talked a lot about that before. So with that, I kind of see like, you know, these wounds coming up from never being recognized for the work that Liam does. That's where I see like the Saturn kind of play into that, where he's put right. in the work throughout his career. And it's even more significant with Taurus in mind, like art and beauty. And yeah, it's just like this conflict that's arising because he's never recognized for his worth. With Scorpio worth in there, like work and worth with yeah. Scorpio in there, it plays into like this whole crazy death charade. So I see all of those kind of aspects in there with like, you know, work with Saturn, life and death with Scorpio, you know, art and with Taurus, the wounds that are created because of that, all playing into like this weird, you know.
It's echoed by the art dealer that it is life and death.
Yeah,
When the police are interrogating him or questioning him, you know, it's just like, it's just part of the job description.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Which is a generalization. It's a bit stereotypical, but yeah, you know, you can buy it.
Yeah. And I'm like, you know, being Lulu's first film, I can't imagine this is something she's like feeling herself, you know, her worth as an artist and
getting that recognition. Right?
Sure. It's like it borders on like absurd. It's like, it's nuts.
Well, like Britt will constantly break the ice where she's like, they're having this whole existential thing with the art dealer and, you know, the ethics of it.
Right.
And, you know, I don't want to be, you know, I don't want people visiting. And then she's like, oh, just popped in through the roof.
Right? I know.
Like found a ladder.
It's like nuts.
I brought you coffee.
It's nuts. And so in her natal chart, like Venus is square Neptune, which for me leads to like, I don't know, like squared is like a disharmonious aspect. So I go like, this has led to like their whack ass relationship. It's like, so why is Mackenzie falling for Liam when he's like manipulative and weird? And so it's like, it's this wild chase of a relationship.
He's a dick. And then he's like, no, like, sure. I know you so well. You don't know yourself.
Yeah. So I see that
he
as
can
like.
See right through her. I don't know.
I see that as exemplifying this like kind of not grounded in reality, this relationship that's developing between them. I think Liam is a total like sun square Uranus, which is in Lulu's birth chart. Okay. It's kind of, I doubt Lulu's like this. So it's just a funny thing that
we doubt that the movie is really, again, you know, we're not
saying
this. We
don't think this is representative of Lulu as a person.
No, it's like, because astrological charts don't actually, you know.
They're not gospel. They are not like, they're not science.
They're not, you know, the Bible.
Sure.
Is it not gospel or it's not scripture?
Okay, sure. With that, I just
it's
mean
not
that
the Holy
like
Ghost.
So sun square Uranus, it's like,
but those themes might pop up in the work. That's what we're saying.
Yeah, I think we talked about this honestly a bit with like Spielberg, that kind of conflict between sun and Uranus. It's like this total need to be an individual, to be unique, which brought to its extremes. It's like, you know, Liam's just a total selfish, like self-absorbed, like asshole. So it's like, I don't know. Anyway,
you can relate that in terms of unrelenting, you know, vision and drive to make the farewell eventually.
Right.
Because this all happens. Her grandmother's diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, mm-hmm. as the farewell is autobiographical, in 2013.
Right.
And given 3 months to live.
Right.
You know, it happens before posthumous. And, you know, throughout, you know, the next 5 years, the rest of last decade, you know, she is similar to Liam, you know, needs, you know, is not backing down and giving into producers' demands, you know, prospective producers' demands to make this art any different than she wants it to be.
Right.
So you can, you know, relate it to that at the very least.
Sure. And I think even playing into, you know, the Pisces themes we saw in both movies, present in both movies, and I'm going to tie it into kind of like the life and death struggle.
But I have an idea of that, yes.
Yeah, in super, super different ways. So specifically with Posthumus. Did I say that right?
I can't even.
I don't know anymore.
No, you did. Yeah, Posthumus.
So in both movies, you get a really strong apparency of life and death. I mean, in the title of the movie itself, right? Mm-hmm. You know that some sort of, you know, theme of death plays into the movie somehow. And I think that it's the sign that's most adept to recognizing and experiencing like duality, not Gemini, which a lot of people might think, because Gemini is like, you know, the two-faced sign.
I have two ideas now. You just said duality.
Yeah.
Wait, is it because I put duality in my notes?
Maybe.
I don't even know.
Anyway.
Oh my God.
Let's carry
Brilliant.
On. You know, Gemini is like the two-faced sign, but that's duality in a very different way than like what we're talking about here. With life and death, I think it's also very different from Scorpio, which you would typically, you know, ruled by Pluto. It's not as dark. It's not as sinister. It's not as final as like, or transformative as the Scorpio's, you know, idea of life or death. It's more of like the bounds between reality and spirituality, and Pisces being the last sign in the zodiac wheel. It contains the knowledge of every sign that came before it, and with that, an ability to transcend reality into spirituality. So that's kind of the life or death situation I see here. So with that, it's like, in Liam's case, how dying like enables their artistic career to take off. They're like immortalized and they're more successful and more attractive because of their death. Like their work becomes more noticed.
I mean, he shaves his beard. He literally becomes more attractive once it becomes.
Yeah, exactly. It like hammers down that like idea of the struggling artist. And I think that's also that, you know, comes up a lot with Pisces as well. Like, you know,
you're like pulled between two worlds, right?
Sure. I know that
compromise for your career and easier success.
Yeah.
Or, you know, stay driven to your vision, right?
Right.
Remain singular.
And with the struggling artist, it's like Pisces is always known to be more prone, you know, some of their more negative aspects, more prone to like escapism. So you look at his alcoholism, he's kind of like, he's disillusioned.
Yeah.
Almost. So yeah, it's like, you know, through his death, he's entering like a different realm of like spirituality where your identity mutates into something entirely new and gives new meaning to your work. So again, to wrap that up, there's something beyond death in this case, both in this movie and The Farewell, which is why I think it's more of like a Pisces life or death than like a Scorpio.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, but it's great to bridge those two. And it makes it's quite poetic that, you know, I didn't know that it was so close because there is a life and death. Well, there's so much, it's so much more extreme in Scorpio and the emotion of that as well.
It's always more like a powerful, like almost more negative thing, right? Like,
well,
Scorpio's the dark, powerful, like mysterious. So like that Pluto life or death is more like, you know, the god of the underworld.
But I mean, but with Scorpio, it's like well, it's Scorpio and Jenkins, you know, it's the external pressures of society pressing down on you that are almost killing you, right? You
and know, it's like
Chiron, you know, on the verge of not death, but he's just like a severely, well, he's in danger. He's in danger a lot of the time. And there is that life and death aspect to it. But it's less to do with an artistic spirituality.
And it's transformational. It's like a rebirth of sorts where this is just like.
He's not really reborn. No.
No, he's just existing beyond his fake suicide.
It's like a purgatory.
Right.
He's in this like, he's in this like career purgatory right now.
Which then gives him the ability to kind of, you know, embody that Pisces nature where he can like see both sides of it.
Right.
He can see reality and he can see beyond that. So anyway.
Okay.
That's that.
That was awesome. Yeah.
Thanks.
So I just wanted to, I didn't mean to say like wrap it up, but I was
I rambled. It's okay.
No, it's good. No, it's set up quite a bit. And I think that we have to do less. Again, you lay the foundation. You have to do less groundwork for The Farewell because it's almost an easier plot story to kind of run through.
Sure.
And there's more in that movie to discuss in terms of what's actually in the film. But I wanted to say that, you know, similar to how it's less of an extreme life and death and it's more about a continuation and it's less of a rebirth, right? It's a purgatory almost. Because it's less extreme, it's almost like the life and death of the art itself. It's either that the farewell wouldn't have existed, therefore almost dead, because Lulu and Liam, similarly, they don't want to see their art live unless they have complete control over it. And this is so silly. And I was also thinking that it's interesting that we're really comparing her to Liam when, like, honestly, she might be closer to Brit, where it's just like she wants to be a writer, right? And then she's sort of caught up in between two worlds right here. But and that's where the duality comes into play, but very briefly, there's like the life and death of the art itself. It's less to do with the artist almost, and it takes on that sort of, again, absurd, ironic meta quality to it where the art has life because of his death. But I also think that similarly is just sort of like, you know, the dualities that you were talking about. I actually saw that in a visual motif. In the hotel room and when I think when they're looking into the art gallery and just similarly through like the, you know, glass building reflective surfaces in Berlin through the cityscape, there is, you know, reflective surfaces, dualities. They're looking into themselves. They're stuck between worlds. That's that purgatory, right? Brit is in this purgatory because she was let go and her boss doesn't really want her anymore. But then the boss takes her back in the end, right? Because she has an interesting piece, because she writes something that's more personal that is driving her to some sort of creative expression and freedom. And similarly, you know, she's between these two guys romantically. It's not necessarily a rebirth, but a continuation and sort of, you know, Mackenzie's not reborn as a writer. She just finds something else, and she sort of, she actually is like, it's like a return to where she wanted to be. And similarly, it's like a return to where Liam wants to be in the beginning, where it's just like alive, doing what he wants, people appreciate his art, right?
And I think that's a big thing for...
The rebirth is almost a falsehood.
Yeah.
Right?
I think that's a big thing. Because
it's a lie that, that he's dead.
Yeah, it is. That's a journey that a lot of people with a lot of... Pisces kind of energy have to realize, or what has been said about Pisces. I did not make up the rules. But because, again, they're kind of towing that line between reality and spirituality, something bigger than themselves. They are, again, prone to disillusionment, escapism, being caught up in dreams and whatnot. So an important journey is for them to ground themselves. And I think that's what's happening here, rather than like a transformation, a rebirth. It's coming back to your roots.
Yeah, right.
Grounding yourself, being like, this is the type of work I want to make. More of a growth thing. Anyway.
Which is exactly what Lulu does in her next movie. What a perfect segue.
Yes.
So two things very, two notes that I had. At some point in time, I think Liam says it, is that acceptance is the, come on, what?
Sorry, no,
I'm trying to make my point.
Okay, go.
What were you going to say?
I was going to say, do you want to talk about, I just want to talk about Buttman.
Yeah, let's talk about Buttman's kiosk.
I don't know. It's like a weird like joke, but there's
we'll also
like a
put that
Buttman's
in the, we'll
kiosk.
Put that at the very end of the motifs that the gallery that I have Buttman's. Of reflective services for post Thomas.
Anyway, not important. Questions. I just like giggled and wrote it down when I saw that.
Buttman's kiosk.
Continue your point.
And like we said in the, we're really digging up the old bones of the spot of the episode that we recorded an hour ago.
I know.
Yeah, I was wondering during like the location scouting, did they find it? Did it happen upon it? That's too good of a find, you know?
Yeah.
Someone must have known about it. So anyway, yeah. They also go to like a boat party or something. Or where do they go? They go to that cool like bar that's by the canal.
Oh, where there's that friggin' like energy ball.
Well, and then it like creates a spark between them literally.
So it's like
it's too
served
obvious.
On a platter.
It's too
it's
obvious.
It's crazy.
Hey, it's a cool thing. I'm sure they're like, yeah,
it's
let's
like,
do
what,
it
are you
to
at
touch
a science
it.
Museum? This it is looks- in a bar? What the hell?
I kind of like
another thing, the Pisces, I'm just thinking now. Sorry,
okay.
And then I'll let you give your point.
Right.
The little fish,
do my segue.
All the fish in their drink, and he pulls them out of his pocket, and it's the fish. What's a Pisces fish?
What fish in their drink? What?
Do you remember how Mackenzie was going hard on those drinks, and they all had little fish in them, the little goldfish? Oh, that's, I like that.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway,
okay.
Make your point.
Well, we can, you know, write those down so we can make some proper posts for these.
I will. Yeah, yeah. It's all in my noggin.
I think Liam says acceptance is the path to happiness, not giving up or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I wrote that down too.
Yeah,
but I
so
lost
there's
it.
That. I don't know if that means any. I don't know if that means anything astrologically or actually for this movie, but I think it works pretty well for the farewell. And then I wanted to say that what the movie is about more than, you know, the story more than the plot. Is that there's an absurdness surrounding death, the irony, and how one can appreciate someone else more once they've passed.
Yeah.
In terms of a career, for Liam as an artist, he's appreciated more. And that segues into the farewell because, you know, the farewell is an autobiographical tale with, you know, some fiction spun, you know, within it. She had a really difficult time making this story where... as it begins, the farewell is based on a true lie or based on an actual lie, I think
yeah.
it is. And it's because the whole family, her grandmother, they're going to stage this whole wedding with one of her cousins, Awkwafina, who plays the lead character, Billy, one of Billy's cousins. And the rest of the family's all in China.
Mm-hmm.
They have lived in America since Billy was younger. And they're going to stage this wedding as an excuse to all visit the grandmother before she passes. But no one is telling the grandmother that she is passing away because they're taking on the burden of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to do that. There's an ethical, moral, again, sort of absurd, funny quality to it all. When she's reading this diagnosis And she's like, oh, great. Like, everything's fine, you know, because they like went to a copy and print spot and said that. What are the little spots on her back?
Benign shadows.
So good.
It's all benign shadows.
It's such a nice note. I know. I love it. I should have written it down. So that's the premise of it. And that's a real thing that was happening and something that Lulu really had to deal with. And she tried for years to make the movie. And eventually she turned it into a This American Life and podcast episode. And then immediately, and I've read this, immediately, a producer was interested. Many parties were interested. And made the movie that she wanted to. And it is, you know, this Asian American immigrant, you know, emigrated from China story. And Awkwafina is that surrogate for the audience as well, because she's dealing with it internally on whether or not they should actually tell the grandmother that she's passing or not. Ends in a very nice way, because
I know
her grandmother has not passed.
We watched that in the theater, and like when Nene is waving, I was like choking up. I was like, oh my God,
That's where it should have ended.
Without, I think more than a few people have said that.
Yeah.
Without that last shot of.
But it's nice.
It's nice,
you know, the birds flying away.
Yeah.
It's such a perfect movie. It really is.
It's lovely.
It is really good. So, I wanted to bridge that together because there's some acceptance in there. The path to happiness, you know, accepting. Yeah, I don't know. I have a couple things that I can preface here, and then we can, if you want to go in and
sure.
do our deep dive and wrap up. But in an interview on Fresh Air with Terry Gross, when talking about emigrating to America and growing up in the States and on her first day of school specifically, I lost a sense of belonging, a sense of wholeness. And you know, from then on, after moving to the States, it's been trying to rediscover that feeling, trying to find that wholeness again, which directly compares to and echoes what the family's doing, where they're trying to, and Awkwafina's journey of trying to become whole again, knowing her heritage, her background, her family, getting back to those roots and returning and understanding, you know, they do this thing called tomb sweeping, which is part of like the Qingming Festival. And that's where they go and they visit the grandfather. And they give them treats. And yeah, it is that acceptance, again, acceptance, path of happiness, acceptance of death, acceptance that like...
It's the treatment of death, right? It's a very cultural thing, but, you know, they're sheltering their loved ones when it's faced with something like cancer, something that's incurable, faced with the unknown of death. But it's also like, yeah, when they are visiting Ye-Ye's grave, they're bringing
him
food, cigarettes, they're bringing him just things. And it's this understanding, they're like... asking him to look over, you know, the wedding, the new couple, something like that. I don't remember what it
just
was specifically.
Just give his blessing or something, yeah.
Exactly, you know. But it's just this.
They want his spirit there.
It's a cultural understanding that, like, death is, again, not final. Like, Ye-Ye is still watching over them existing on some other spiritual plane or realm or something like that.
And I can say to that, in the same interview with Terry Gross, Lulu, like, talks about how, like, the premise is comedic but not a joke. And that there's a deeply rooted spirituality to understanding her family, but you know, Billy's family and culture's relationship with and beliefs surrounding death and dying. So with that, you know, she says it's sort of an absurd situation, but she goes on this journey to kind of understand that it's not actually absurd, actually very grounded in these Eastern philosophies and rooted in this idea that mind and body are connected, and also comes to have a little bit more understanding of the collective as a unit and the value of that. So the collective, in terms of her family and connecting back home there, and yeah, it's a spiritual journey of sorts, and it's accepting that. And, you know, surrounding it is the lie, though, right? So again, like Posthumous, there's death and lies and a bit of a duality there, because there's East and West in America and China. But it plays less into that and more about like there's almost an authenticity or realness to grounding herself in what seems to be absurd and seems to be almost hard to comprehend, as in death not being final or death as just sort of like, yeah, what did you see here and how can I bounce off that?
Sure. I think honestly, a lot of the themes... or the things, the points that you just brought up, like show up astrologically in some way or another. For if you're comparing this movie to Posthumous, it is a lot more personal. It's rooted in her culture and her family.
And it happened to her.
And it happened to her.
Yeah.
So it's a fictionalized true story. I think with that, even though this, like you mentioned, this was kind of like something that had come up a lot earlier than 2019, still at the time of the making of this movie, the release of this movie, transiting Uranus was opposite Lulu's natal Saturn. So it's this like need to relieve these like inner tensions with through like her work and by projecting that outwards through her work. With Uranus versus Saturn being in opposition to one another, it's kind of, so take like Saturn, we've talked about enough times. Uranus is about, you know, rebellion, change, upheaval, progression. So it's, you know, this uncertainty surrounding the past and the future between what happens after Nene dies, being uncertain of her own future with not getting the fellowship, things like that. And it's Lulu projecting that outwardly. She's like trying to relieve these tensions she's feeling within herself and the uncertainties in her life.
Which is something that she would have, she's a bit of a black sheep in her family because they don't tell her, this is something I missed, but they don't really invite her until she, you know, sees that something's wrong.
Right.
When she visits her parents because she's too emotional.
Right.
And the idea
classic
is that
water sign.
And the idea is that the little fishy getting tearing up in the, and like traditionally this is echoed with the doctor when she's speaking in English to the doctor who's diagnosing her grandmother when she has sort of a relapse of a lot of like the coughing and, you know, and she says, and he says, well, we did this for my family too. It's just sort of like, why burden them with that in their final days? And there's a saying that like persists throughout the movie. Billy's mother, Diana Lin, plays her. And Chinese people have a saying, when people get cancer, they die. It's not the cancer that kills them, it's the fear. And so again, it's that acceptance part of it. It's the collective and mind and body connecting, where like if you're fearful of something of your body might give into it. So we'll take on that and we'll sort of spread the fear around, or not around, but like take it internally.
Sure.
And yeah, like there is that. There is just such a collective unit. There's just like large, there's not too many close-ups in this movie, and it's only during like internal reflection, and you're not getting that cat hair off your sweater anytime soon. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of it is framed in these sort of longer shots to detail this family unit all living in one shared space, right? You know, you have the circular tables, the lazy Susan spinning around when they go and eat, and everything takes place while they're eating, this really like big family collective, you know, shared space atmosphere, because mind and body, spiritually, shared space, and physically, they're all trying to take on the death and the lie, so as to not, you know, burden. I keep repeating myself, but sure. Burden Nene, yeah.
And the reason Billy is the odd one out in this situation is because she's the only one who, you know, doesn't necessarily want to go along with the lie. You know, she wants...
Well, and that's because, at least in the movie, and a lot of her family believes it's because of her growing up in America.
Right.
Right.
Right. So, okay.
She's not like deeply sort of rooted in these philosophies that a lot of her family and especially her parents understand and sort of internalize
which
already.
Which I think is interesting because, so like you said, they immigrated to America when she was very young.
Or 5 or 6. So she had enough memories that she knew it was weird. You know, that's
which
the thing.
Led
she didn't
to that
have a sense of belonging.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with that, I see a lot of her Chiron and Taurus where, you know, they moved to America because of opportunity, because of the promise of like good fortune, good careers, the opportunity to like have what they might have been deprived of in China. And with that, we also see that Nene kind of still holds that within her. Like, why do we need the big banquet hall? Why do we need all these people at the wedding? Because, you know, it's the wedding of like my grandchild. It has to look good for other people.
Yeah,
so there's still that conflict with like feeling like, you know, not having enough and having to kind of like put on a show and look like you have more.
And I think that might be, and this is an outsider's perspective, and Lulu's talked about how it's an American movie for sure. And so we understand it as that, like, that might be a Chinese thing, but also like a grandmother thing. A lot of like, you know,
of course,
I think that's, you know, generationally and universally, depending on where you are, that I understand that.
Right.
Yeah.
But back to,
sorry.
You know, no. The lie, Billy growing up in America, so not really understanding the implications of, like, you know, why this is a general practice done by a lot of families, you know, when their loved ones are sick.
Why this is ethical.
I looked it up and I'm not sure if there's
morally sound.
I'm not sure if there is a sign that is most prone to lying. I don't know if that actually shows up in someone's birth chart.
Right.
But from what has been said, it seems like it's, you know, generally accepted, like Scorpio and Gemini aside, which if you know, you know. But Pisces is actually honestly quite prone to lying because they can see both sides of things, because they can.
And because they have all the knowledge of every other side.
All the knowledge.
Yeah.
Exactly. That kind of idea.
It's
where
a good lie.
They have the knowledge, the understanding of kind of like every side of a situation to be like, this is ethical to lie. But
it's the acceptance there, though, that we keep mentioning, right?
Sure. Yeah. And this is where my moon debate comes in.
Okay.
Where I go, what is her moon sign? Is it Cancer? Is it Leo? I don't have her houses, so I don't know if like the fourth house plays a big role in her chart. I will never know unless I know her birth time. But Cancer is not really
Lulu,
in her
tell
chart.
Us. I know. And we'll do a part two.
So because of the strong
we'll negate
emphasis,
everything we say.
Because of the strong emphasis on family specifically, I go, oh, like Moon and Cancer would be a shoo-in, all right?
Okay.
And her, like, reluctance to lie because you're, like, the nurturing, very emotional, mothering figure with Pisces and Cancer. She's, like, full of water, full of emotions. Okay. But I would see Cancer as having that reluctance to lie because you just want to do what's best for Nene in this case. You know, doesn't she deserve to know if she's dying? So that's where I see that kind of pull existing within her.
Which,
you know, Cancer, I think, would work really well if that happened to be her moon sign. But the moon kind of also exemplifies like your mothering figures. And if you take a look at Billy's mother in the movie, she is very closed off. She is not an emotional person, which I go, that moon in Leo could also play in there where it's like this kind of resilience or this like armor that she wants to build up. She doesn't want to show that she's emotional. She's talking about, exactly. She's like, I see people like, I think it's just ridiculous when they have, like, when she's talking about the people that are hired at funerals to cry. She's
well,
like,
and
I
she
think
talks about her own father's funeral, right?
And everyone
thought,
expected her to cry.
And I didn't, right?
So that's where I see kind of like both sides playing in. But again, the emphasis on family, I think there are a lot of Cancer traits in there. And again, that would kind of exemplify that pull between, okay, lying to her or just like wanting to tell the truth.
Hey, moon in duality. All right. How about that? There's the duality there.
Not bad.
It's not bad. Doesn't really check out or.
It's fine. Yeah. It's again, it's all interpretive.
Yeah. It's a great way to just, you know, glean more about this, this movie.
Oh, I guess her north node's in Cancer. So that is also something that's important where it's like her role in this life is to like, you know, is partly serving her family and,
that's the big lesson for Billy in this, and that's the arc to understand that, like, even if you don't want to do it or you're not sure if you can take this on, you have to for others. And and also, you know, she's at the beginning, Billy is seen as a bit selfish. She had her rent's late. She's kind of mooching off of like what seems to be like an acquaintance and her mom. She's like, you haven't paid for 2 months. She's doing her laundry at her parents and her parents are, you know, hard on her. But she's trying her best, obviously. And she's acquainted with both, you know, East and West where she can just, she is just, it's the duality there, I guess, you know, just between worlds.
Well, that's.
But she also doesn't feel like she belongs in either of them, I don't think.
And
right?
Again, that's that like feeling of displacement, disillusionment with Pisces. But that journey of Pisces and in becoming more grounded, understanding like your family, your roots, your homeland, where you come from. I don't remember if we talked about this with Barry, but her natal Jupiter in Sagittarius, which is in its domicile, it's where Jupiter belongs. That exemplifies that like crossing of cultural boundaries and understanding of cultural differences between different cultures. That I said twice. I didn't say that very nicely, but
we're wrapping up here. We ran longer than we wanted to on this, but pretty good. You know, flies by, man.
I know. It's just so fun to talk about movies.
So do interrupt me at all, but my few observations for the farewell, and we will bid a farewell to all our listeners. Billy, therefore the audience, we're kind of surrounded by lies in dialogue and in set design as well. So, you know, mise-en-scene and the script, right? So in the very first conversation, so the very first scene, Billy lies to her Nene. Is it Nene or Nene? I'm an idiot. It's a Nene.
I don't know.
I know, it's like, but we should know this.
Nene. I think it's Nene. Yeah. Oh, we've been saying it incorrectly.
You're kidding me.
It's fine.
I'm so disappointed in myself.
I've been saying Nene as well. I think it's okay.
We don't even know how to say posthumous. We're not good at speaking.
We're idiots, guys. We're idiots, right?
Mapped more onto the stars, dude. Okay. She lies to her Nene.
Remember when I couldn't pronounce Chiron? Chiron?
Yeah, that's I still know. Chiron. Chiron. Should we look up the pronunciation before we close off the episode?
Yeah.
Let's, okay, transition.
BRB. It's Nene.
Nene.
It's fine.
Anyway, in the very first scene, she lies by saying, she's like, yes, I'm wearing a hat. When her Nene asks if she's wearing a hat. So she already is sort of like familiar with lying to her grandmother.
Right.
And it's just like an adding sort of this whole existential element and ethical element to it. Thereafter.
But lying when it like serves a...
But it's a good lie.
Exactly.
But again, because what is she doing? She's taking the burden of like her Nene is worried about her in New York. Nene York. And she's like taking that on though. It is that sort of thing of like, oh, don't worry. You don't have to take the worry. Yes, I'm wearing it so that you have to worry. So it almost acts as this nice echo and foreshadowing of what is to come, you know? So in that first scene, so we're surrounded by it there, you know, it begins with that. Essentially, you know, it's this path to spirituality and acceptance, but it's a path to truth in the end, finding out
sure,
that like
yeah.
what's common for her culture, you know, they don't end up ever telling the grandmother. In the mise-en-scene, again, even in that first scene where there's a lie, the very first shot is of like a fake landscape of a painting. And it's artificial, you know, it's like a body of water with some mountains and it's not, it's fake, you know, it's a lie, essentially. So it ends on a shot of birds leaving and it's a real tree, it's real birds, you know. So there's this path and, you know, closure into truth, you know, the artificial into natural. And that's echoed constantly with sort of like, you know, Billy's in the hotel room in China and the AC turns on and there's artificial air. She can't even drink the water. She has to boil it.
Question about that though.
What?
And sorry to interrupt you because classic. When you talked about the hotel scene, in that same scene, the bird comes into the window.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I think the bird's the grandpa.
Yai?
Yeah. You know, I think so. And again, it ends on the trees and she's connecting mind and body and, you know, nature because she's sort of like in these artificial environments. Let's just say with like, you know, if it's the air conditioning in the hotel room, it's the breathing in and breathing out and getting out, you know, and feeling young and, you know, spiritually healed through the morning exercises and routines, getting rid of any negative emotion, as far as I can tell, and negative energy, and does that in the middle of New York and the birds all fly away and everything. And so it's connecting back to the naturalistic landscape, you know, some sort of wholeness to the world, right? She's a person's life belongs to a whole, right? It's echoed in what the mother says about taking on the burden and that like the mind and body are connected. In China, people belong to a collective. The family's a collective, you know, the needs of the group are more important than the needs of the individual. So, you know, with that, even in the set design, the mise-en-scene, the wedding photos for the cousin and his fiance are in this fake forestry and they're talking about, you know, the Guggenheim, I think, and they're talking about, you know, just Billy's life generally. And so, again, it's sort of like this dichotomy of having these real natural... And, you know, they're surrounded by these lies, though, consistently, which always then connect back to this nature imagery. So I think it's fitting that, you know, the first shot is a fake painting, quite, you know, obviously of, you know, a landscape, you know, portrait And it ends on, you know, a real shot of trees and oxygen. And it's sort of just this. And that's why I almost go like, well, maybe those, you know, for the story and the plot, you know, it makes sense that it would end right where they're driving away.
Sure.
Right?
Right.
Because there's something so poetic about the drives into the city and seeing that it's all passing by in the rearview mirror, that the life that she knew before the lie mm-hmm. is gone, and the life that she thinks she's going to know because her, as far as we can tell, and we think, you know, the grandmother's going to pass. So it's all passing by her in the rearview mirror. So it's a return, mm-hmm. right? You know, not a rebirth again, but again, it's these return to the roots that we talked about with Liam and Britt,
yeah.
and again with Billy, and autobiographically, generally, you know, sort of returning back to something and finding that the spiritual element. I'm saying so many words and I'm rambling.
It's okay.
I keep saying the same thing, but it is. It's this return to something that's natural in the landscape that's going to connect you to a larger whole and collective. In the universe,
sure.
The energy, the spirituality that's surrounding you. Yeah.
I totally agree. And I think I'll say it one more time. But again, Pisces is the last sign in the zodiac wheel. It has the knowledge of every sign that came before it. So with this whole journey, you know, it is about endings and it is about saying goodbye. It's the first time, I guess first and last, it's the first time that Billy has been home in ages and she doesn't recognize it and it is different.
Yeah.
And it's potentially the last time she's seeing Nene. And what I kind of saw from that is, you know, the first shot where she's driving into China, you know, she's watching the buildings pass and it's like bright, if not a bit gloomy, but it's just, you know, the landscape as it is. And mm-hmm. and when she drives out, it's the exact same shot, but it's like dark and cloudy. It almost looks like it might rain. So yeah. It's like, and this is why I think that that last scene is kind of important. I think it is important.
No,
I
know.
I won't belittle it. Because... Again, it's not about...
I totally contradict myself. It is a great ending.
Because it's not about endings. It's like what Billy gained from this trip will like kind of... She'll carry with her.
It's more truthful to her arc, understanding and accepting the truth to it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, or that, you know, yeah, it's death is not final.
Sure. Yeah. Pisces is a mutable sign at being the last sign in the wheel. And again, it's not about like a transformation, but she is changed after the experience. It's not a final ending. It's just like everything, it's Billy encompassing everything she's gained from this experience, understanding more about her culture, where she comes
from. You feel really hopeful for Billy at the end.
Fully. Yeah. It's not like
again, anyway. it's a happier ending. Yeah.
For sure. So I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
I wish I was more succinct. I should have written down my notes like I did for Barry sometimes when I was like actually had these are the sentences that I construct and I can, you know, riff off that. But
this is
our second take of this and we're glad that
we did way better than us the second time.
We blasted it out.
Love Lulu. We're so excited for her next movie, whatever that might be.
Yeah, we're here. We'll be there day one in the theaters.
Yes.
When theaters open.
Fully.
Again. And I'm remiss every single time I edit an episode because I do not thank Sarah Helm for the artwork.
Or
Jacob Anstey. Jacob Anstey for the music.
Thank you, Sarah Helm.
Thank you for our, you know, collaborators and friends. Thank you to the King of Burpees.
For following
whatever
us on
your name. Whatever your name is. That account followed us.
That is at Map to the Stars podcast on Instagram. Map to the Stars podcast on Facebook.
Still.
MTTS podcast on Twitter.
If you don't know it.
Map to the Stars podcast.buzzsprout.com. But yeah. I'm sure you're listening on Spotify or Apple or some other streaming form.
Yeah, we saw some like Android, like smart devices, you know, Google Home. You know, it's got weird stats.
I know.
You're looking at my hair. What's going on?
No, it looks great.
I don't have any hair to look at, honestly. Anyway. Yeah, we got all the credits out of the way. We've been your filmy chartographers. Thank you for joining us on this journey. And we know who we're taking up, but we'll announce it on.
We'll leave it as a secret.
Anyway, this has been good. Second is the best because first is the worst.
You tell them.
All right. Bye, everyone.